I'm really excited about this next conversation. It's always tough times for writers, as you know. Maybe you don't, but unless you're J.K. Rowling, you don't actually make much. And to be an aspiring young writer is even tougher. Most writers don't make a living wage. And the road to being published is almost without exception long and full of rejection slips. But the urge to write is something that can be irresistible. And there's always a new generation who are prepared to tolerate the downsides. You know, the work in isolation, the soul-bearing, the naysayers, and the general indifference. A bit of encouragement goes a long way, which is why the Hachette Australia Prize for Young Writers gets such a strong response. For instance, this year, over 550 entries were submitted from Australian secondary school age students in three categories: fiction, creative non-fiction, and poetry. And two Tasmanians made it into the national non-fiction shortlist of just five. So two out of five nationally. And they're with me in the studio this morning. Miranda Guy, who's a Year 12 student, and Lara Vincent, also Year 12, has gone on to be the joint winner in that category. Congratulations to you both.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And winning, Lara. That's brilliant. I mean, that's quite a field of entries.
I was surprised when it happened, because we sort of thought we would find out a couple of weeks beforehand. And when we didn't, we were like, oh, well, congrats to both of us for getting in the shortlist anyway. And then I got an email a couple of weeks back and they were just like, oh, you won. It was like, oh. Well, then, that's cool.
Who chooses the winners? Is it you've got a mentor, Danielle Binks.
Yes.
I presume she's one of the judges.
She was. She was a she was like a mentor both to the writers but also to the judges, I believe. So yeah. I don't actually know who the judges panel was, but Danielle Binks was one of them.
And of course you had to read it. There's like a video submission too.
Yes, that was probably the hardest part of it.
Yeah. Was that early on, or is that just when you get to the shortlist?
No, that was once you got into the shortlist. It was part of making sure you maintained your part in the shortlist. You had to send in a thing for the festival.
I know. You got to perform it.
Yes.
which is hard because in both cases your entries are quite emotional ones, laden with life experience, good and bad. So it would have been quite a confronting exercise, would it have been, to have actually performed it as opposed to putting it down on paper?
It was a little bit, but I have background as a singer and things like that, so it was a little bit easier for me to perform it. Definitely had to take many, many takes, either because I said it wrong or because I didn't have the right energy.
Yeah.
But once it was complete, it was a huge weight off my chest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, there was courage under fire. I mean, I think you delivered it. So you both delivered it so well. We'll get to the individual pieces in a moment. Do you think you would have written them anyway without the incentive of the prize? Was it? What do you think?
Well, we both actually wrote our pieces as part of a sort of memoir and autobiographical unit that we did in our English writing class.
Seriously?
So, yeah. So this is actually going to be part of our folio for our marking this year.
Yeah.
So we would have written it anyway. I don't believe personally I would have written it if I hadn't had the class.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Had you done anything like that before?
I have, but never anything I've workshopped to the point that I did this particular piece.
Was there a word brief about it? What was like about 1,000? What is it, about 1,000 words? 1,500? What is it?
3,000? Yeah, about 3,000.
Up to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could be totally misremembering, but it definitely felt like 3,000 when I was reading it.
Yeah. So it's not too short a form.
No.
They're both intensely personal pieces. We'll start with yours, Lara, which is called What Home Is. Now, it's interesting because I presume the intention was for you to talk about a geographical place or perhaps even a state of mind. And you took a different spin altogether, as in a sense dictated by your life experience. Can you just talk to that for a bit?
Yeah. So a lot of people, when they're examining the question of like what home is that they do look at a geographical location or a mind state or a person even. But for me, with a lot of the life experiences I've had and things, I've always found that a very restrictive question, because to me, I don't think I've ever had one. Certainly not for a lot of my years.
As you say, up front, really.
Yes, I'm very open in it in my piece.
So you tip over that whole sort of expectation immediately.
Immediately.
And then start speaking to it.
Yes, I believe my first line is actually, I don't yet have a concept of what home is to me.
Yeah.
And in fact, I always kind of scoffed at that the question in the first place for a lot of people. I always laughed when I see it in movies and things. It's just that metaphor.
But it's interesting because it's not, both in the way you write it and indeed the way you say it, it's not a highly emotive, the power is in the words.
Yes.
But it's sort of underneath. It's what's not said in a way that's
yes,
really powerful.
I didn't. I tried not to, I guess, scar the readers. I have a habit of doing that with my past.
Because you could milk.
I could.
And make it melodramatic and lessen the impact in
exactly.
a way.
But I know full well that a lot of the people, my target audience especially, was far more impacted by just what wasn't said, what was I alluding to kind of thing.
Yeah, indeed. And yours is utterly different. Miranda,
yes,
because it's called Nana. It's a reminiscence of your grandmother.
Yeah,
and that. But for me, the sucker punch was at the end when she dies, and you have to describe the way you felt at the funeral. So you were talking about an emotional process, and that too was immensely powerful. Was that hard to write? Because to crystallize those sorts of almost unspeakable things, the things that are very hard to explain properly, would have been a real challenge.
It sort of was, yeah. It was fresh in my mind because my nan had passed away about 2 weeks before we started our unit. So that's why I thought, well, now's a good time to write about it. And I think the stories that I told are things she'd want me to tell. And, you know, because they were her own stories.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'll pass them on in a piece. And so I think, yeah, that was sort of my contribution to her stories.
It's interesting because it's like reportage all the way through. That we did this, you know, she was like this, and then she declines. And again, you're very quite matter-of-fact about that, and then she passes. And you think, okay, well, she's obviously a nice person. And then you save it for the end, for the funeral, where suddenly we're told how you feel. And the feeling you express there is, in a sense, the feeling that was there all the way through, you just hadn't said it yet, which obviously is intentional.
Yeah.
And just completely blindsides the reader.
Thank you.
It's very hard not to be. Was it hard to say it? I mean, when you actually had to say it on camera?
I guess it was in a way. It was, It's a different feeling when you have to read out your own writing because I think the processes are completely different. When you write it, it is quite therapeutic to just put it down, that's how you feel, but then like putting it into words and actually verbalising it is quite different. But I think it was good as well to sort of have it said.
Did you find it therapeutic too, Lara? Because
for me, I'm a youth consultant for foster kids and things like that. So I'm very used to sharing that kind of thing. So I think it had less of an impact on me than it did on the people who read it and who heard it for the first time. Certainly it was very therapeutic to kind of, once I actually got into like the sort of poetic, more poetic lines within it, it was a bit more therapeutic than just the matter of fact, like this happened and then this happened kind of thing. Because it's easy for me to say that at this point in my life. But when I'm trying to describe it is when it starts to get a bit more emotional.
Yeah. What sort of counselling do you do? I mean, kids, is it troubled kids who come to...
No. So my job is to basically attend foster care training and work where an ambassador for youth is needed. And my job is to basically take a lot of what I've heard from other young people, whether in care or not, and voice their concerns to politicians, to new carers, to anyone who might want to listen. So that's my job.
Yeah. Clearly you're talking about an abusive childhood and
a
troubled one. You make allusion to the number of places that you've lived in. So I suppose the writing is a way of starting to work through a lot of that, although you've presumably had a lot of time to try and work through it anyway.
Yes.
Where are you at in the spectrum of things with all that?
I think I'm well on my healing journey at this point. Certainly not everything is fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
I had to do a lot of reminiscing in order to just remember some basic information for this, mainly just because so much has happened and I don't have any documentation to talk about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I definitely think writing it kind of brought a lot of it back up in my mind. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, that happened. But I think compared to how I spoke in the piece, a lot of things have changed. Like,
right.
I was writing that kind of from a past Lara sort of point of view, whereas me now is like looking back on that, like, I feel better now.
Well, it's amazing because, I mean, a lot of people, especially at this stage in life, would sort of have shut the door on all that and said, I'm just not, I don't want to go there. I don't, you know, I don't want to visit that again. I'm not ready. And at the age of 16, 17, you were, which is quite amazing, sort of to let that come out. Let's talk about the writers who have influenced you or not. In your case, Lara, where there's a great simplicity about the way you write.
Yes. Compared to a lot of my other writing, there were far less influences for this particular piece, mainly because a lot of it was just straight from mind. A lot of my writing is influenced by writers like Stephen King and... my mind has died. Stephen King, I guess.
Well, Stephen King, I mean, he's an interesting one because he's someone who has written about the craft of writing,
yes,
as you both know. And he also has that amazing work ethic, doesn't he? I'm going to write 2,000 words a day and I'm going to do it every day for 90 days until I've got 180,000 words, and that's where I'll start from. Is that something that you try to emulate?
Yes, very much so. My writing process is highly influenced by him. I've read all of his books, or the ones that I've been able to get my hands on anyway. I'm close to reading all of them.
He's an amazing
writer. He's very good at the tactic of showing and not telling. And that's mainly what I picked up and why I named him as an influence for this particular piece, is because it's that matter of, like, you could say everything. You could say that, like, oh, I was abused and I did all these things. But it's got a lot more impact if you word it in a way where you have to read it twice.
What about you, Miranda? It's interesting. People say, I can't write until I'm inspired, you know. And the world is full of writers who are sitting there waiting to be inspired. But you've just got to turn up at the office, don't you, and just start doing it. Is that how you took on this particular piece of yours, Nana?
Yeah, I think I do procrastinate a lot when I have to write, but I think the best way to start writing is, well, you know, start by starting, because the more you write, the more you understand what you're writing and the more you know. So
yeah.
I think just once you get into the right headspace and start writing, it all becomes a lot easier.
Was it a fast write, this piece of yours, Nana?
Not really, I don't think. I really put it off and I thought, oh, I'll just reflect a bit more and I'll think about it, but once I actually started putting my thoughts on the page, it all went a lot quicker. And then obviously, like, the editing process was a lot longer because...
You or someone else? Who was editing?
Us.
We both edited.
You just rewrote each other's?
No.
Oh, okay.
With our teacher, I think. She was really helpful. Yeah. She's lovely.
A good editor is a fine thing.
Yes.
Aren't they?
That was part of the process, was just trying to workshop it to make sure every word was needed, every punctuation was necessary.
Oh,
and
I
just
like it. I like it.
It went for a while, but we got there.
Nothing in excess.
Exactly.
Take away the stuff that shouldn't be
there. Because it was
such
a strict word count as well, we had to make sure that everything was perfect.
The deadline's useful, isn't it? Like, it's got to be ready by next Tuesday. And you think, this is ridiculous. How can you be creative like that? But then you realise that's just how it is. It's actually quite a good
I don't
thing.
Do anything without a deadline. No. I have to set myself arbitrary ones if I need to get anything
that's
done.
Right. It was Douglas Adams. I think he said,
yes,
I love the sound of deadlines make as they fly, as they fly past you.
Yep.
He was a bit of a procrastinator.
Extensions are my best friend.
Lara, look, one thing, this piece of yours, What Home Is, it's part of the prize is it gets published.
Yes.
On the Express Media website.
Yes.
Which I've just been getting to through the Hachette website as well. Now, it sort of means that it's now public domain. What you're saying yourself becomes, you know, anyone can access that now. How do you feel about that?
At first, when I realised that was part of it, I was kind of like, oh, no, icky, don't like that, kind of thing, because I guess the best way to put it is I'm a selfish person. My words belong to me, and I don't like when other people, like, use or abuse them, I suppose, and I didn't want anyone to take it the wrong way. But looking at how other writers have been published on Express and things like that, and the where that writing goes, it doesn't tend to be turned around. Because it's a non-fiction creative piece, it's not something that people can misconstrue and use in a different way. It's just like, that's my piece.
Yeah.
And if people want to read it and if that becomes public domain, that's okay
that's
with
okay.
me. Yeah.
I'm talking to Lara Vincent and Miranda Guy, who were both finalists, really, in the Hachette Prize for Young Writers in the non-fiction creative nonfiction category. Lara's actually gone on to win it. Miranda, what amazed me about your piece is the detail in it. It's really uncanny the way that you can, because it gets a bit fuzzy. Charlotte gets a bit fuzzy later on. Was it all there to begin with, or did you find that detail about places and things and expressions, that all came back to you as you started writing?
Yeah, I think I found the more that I wrote, the more I remembered. So it was a good, I guess, exercise in jogging my memory and having these memories on paper. So I hopefully won't forget them again. But yeah, it was like I did spend a lot of time with my nan when I was little, so I had quite a lot of these memories were deeply ingrained and also repeated. They were almost habitual, but
yeah.
I guess some elements were new.
Absolutely. Now, you're both deeply into words in a generation which has far more visual stimuli than ever before. And if I look at my own daughters, I mean, it's just the pictures are crowding everything else out. It's so great, isn't it, to still have an involvement in the written word, because there's less of it these days.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? It is.
I, for one, this might be a very Gen Z perspective to take.
Yeah.
I have never agreed with, what's the word?
Comparing
the written word with the digital world.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people find digital to be like a primarily negative thing, but I found it's helped me. The way I started at being a writer was reading and writing fan fiction, for example. And I know a lot of people started that way. And a lot of my inspirations come from what I find online rather than what I find in the real world. So I definitely think it's more difficult for Gen Alpha than it is for Gen Z, because Gen Z came in where you were still having to write in school.
Yeah.
Whereas now it
the
is
alphas
primarily
are still
digital.
8, 9, 10. That's how they're working. All
so
the time.
I'm more interested to see what happens with them. Whereas with Gen Z, I think the majority of us still appreciate the written word. A lot of us still grew up with Harry Potter in the same way that the people back in the 90s did.
Yeah.
And a lot of us still really enjoy like all those books and things like that. So I think it's less of an issue than a lot of adults tend to think it is.
That's a relief.
But I could just be speaking for myself.
Oh, that's fair enough. I think you're right there. Look, what is it, 10:30? I'm so fascinated by this. Quickly, what happens now? Because, Lara, for instance, you mentioned wanting to be an art conservator, I think,
yes,
in your piece.
Well,
what about writing and stuff now?
Well, now that I've won, my goals have slightly shifted. It's kind of like I really wasn't expecting that to happen, so I am interested to see where these opportunities take me.
Sure.
I've always wanted to be a writer, but as you mentioned at the beginning of this segment, it's not easy. It's not an easy journey. It's trying to get published, trying to come up with ideas. Writing in the first place is really difficult, and you can't just go to uni and get a full-time job being like, I'm a writer, and have people pay you. You've got to write the thing first. So I definitely will be pursuing it, whether as a career or just as a hobby. But it's just a matter of, I suppose, outlining where I want to go.
Don't worry, like you're 17. You know, there'll be 18 more changes of mind, believe me, over the next couple of decades. Everything's good. What about you, Miranda?
I really don't know what I want to do in the future, but I certainly hope that it does include writing, because it is something I love and I never get tired of. So
yeah, you were mentioning arts law to me, I think, at some point.
Yes, arts law, hopefully. So hopefully writing involved in that.
Good detail, good legal mind, I think. It's all in the detail.
Yes.
But yeah, keep writing. It's great stuff. And those who go into the Hachette Young Writers Prize website, they can still access your performances.
Yes,
to camera,
I don't
good.
Think that'll get taken down. I'm pretty sure that's
stay
up there,
there
for
okay.
ever.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Listen, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it, especially on a Sunday morning. And I wish you well with the big exams coming up in a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Year 12.
Thank you.
And congratulations to both of you. It's fabulous, fabulous talent. Great reading.
Thank you.
Good
so
to
much.
Meet you. Cheerio.
You too.
That's they are shortlisted and prize-winning writers Lara Vincent and Miranda Guy, whose pieces you should look up and have a read. It's great stuff.